Let the show begin. You guys have fun out there today.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George, Tom, and Kelly.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 71. This week we're going to have the boys from Valkyrie Defense on, talking about the CERT training pistol and other training options. But before we get to those fine gentlemen, let's start off with what we did in guns. And mine is pretty much same old, same old. I'm done school, but now I'm trucking and I'm not finding a whole lot of time. So I thought about guns. I talked about guns with my life insurance guy. Came over on Saturday. That was fun. And I've been, when I've had a few moments, I've been binging on NCIS on Show Me. So, and they have guns. So that's about the extent of my guns.
So you've been able to watch the show, but you haven't been able to get to the range?
Wow. When I say binging on NCIS, I fall asleep to an episode. I usually watch an episode when I get home while I'm making dinner. The great thing about Show Me is I've got it on my iPad, so I set my iPad up in my cupboard while I'm doing my dishes and making supper. And then I've got a computer in my bedroom and I just fall asleep.
So is it like when you're watching Westerns, do you find a little gun where you're watching NCIS? Or that's only for Westerns?
Just Westerns.
Okay.
What about dry firing?
I've done no dry firing.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I did watch, Wanda and I went to see that Leonardo DiCaprio movie last night. And, it was awesome. It's 1700s, all flint block muskets, and yeah.
George, I don't even know which one that is.
Flintlock, I think, or not, I think it's flintlock. Muzzle loaders. 1700 muzzle loaders.
What was the name of the show?
It's that weird name one.
No idea.
In something, or I don't know.
No.
It's the Leonardo DiCaprio movie that's out right now where he gets eaten by a bear.
Cool!
I saw the new James Bond movie. It was cool.
So, that's about the extent of what I did in guns.
Okay.
Thomas. How about you? What'd you do in guns?
Kelly?
Well, he said Thomas, so...
Oh.
Unless Kelly's changed her name to Thomas.
Yeah.
Could be, but she's her voice is so deep right now. I took two newbie shooting. I took Stacy and Lisa up to the range. Stacy was the one girl that I took. They had a surprise birthday party shoot for her in May. I took them all up. So she's been asking me to take her up her second time. So I took up her and her buddy Lisa. And I'm telling you, these two girls rocked. I probably went through eight targets. I had no issues, no problems with the girls. They both shot very good. But her friend Lisa, just freaking amazing. Like the groups this girl was shooting, I'd have a hard time keeping up with her. By her last target, she had all 10 shots in the black, and she shot an 86.
Good for her.
Yeah, she did really, really well. So we shot indoors for a bit. I put her on the 22s, the 22-45, the Smith & Wesson 22A. And then but they're using optics for those two guns. So I did a little instruction about open sights, and I let them dry fire the Grand Palo Excalibur to get used to that. But all I had was full metal jackets. We had to shoot those outside. So we got out to the range, and there was somebody already downrange. So we're waiting for the guy to come back. And sure enough, it's listener Tom. He was there. And he had a Chinese SKS and a crate full of ammo. So he asked the girls if he wanted to try the SKS. So first they put him on the ground power. They fired five shots each, and they absolutely hated it. The recoil, the impulse, noise, they didn't like it at all, which was fine. No?
That's a 45, right?
No, it's a 9mm.
Oh, is that 9?
Yeah. That's why I always start people with a 22, because you put a center fire in the hand, it tends to dissuade them. So they didn't really like the 9mm, but they love the SKS because we just put it on a bench in the front, and they've got a much more stable platform. Stacy kept all her shots on paper. That's Lisa, good. On the other hand, man, oh man, she was doing three-shot groups, and two out of three were touching on each string. She really impressed the hell out of me. So I know Stacy's talking about getting her firearms license, and I think that Lisi might be interested too. She didn't want to come. Stacy just wanted someone to keep her company. She more or less begged her to come up. She's like, I'm just here to keep her company. I probably won't do very well. And she smoked everybody. They made me shoot two targets, and I think I tied her at the 86.
Nice.
What else do they do? I actually contacted the RCMP to see if I'm still considered an active verifier, and apparently I'm still on the list. I'm still considered a verifier. So I had to log into the Canadian government program now, so I can access the FRT database directly instead of using the CD. But ever since they started doing the verification online, I've never got a call to verify anybody.
Now, what is? Let's explain what that is. What does that mean? What's a firearms verifier? What do you do?
Well, what originally happened when C68 kicked in, everybody had to register their firearms. Restricted always had to be registered and verified. But none of the, when you registered it, it wasn't verified. So once people started selling firearms between themselves, once the registry kicked in, anybody that registered anything in the beginning, the firearm wasn't verified. So what would happen, say, if I wanted to sell you one of my guns and it wasn't verified, you had to take it to a verifier, and they had to go in the FRT database. They had to assign a verifier, an FRT number to that firearm. And it was a lot of work. I had one guy call me one day. He owned, I think it was a Dutch oven restaurant just north of Newcastle here. And when he bought the restaurant, it included 150 firearms that were mounted on the wall. And none of these firearms were verified. And they're all antiques. So when he sold the restaurant, the new owner got his firearms license, but he couldn't transfer anything into his name because they all had to be verified. I spent 3 days at that stupid restaurant verifying all these antique firearms. And we don't get anything for it. We're not allowed to charge for it.
Did you at least get meals?
No, the cheap SOS. He charged me for my coffee.
Be nice.
I said, can I ever get a coffee while I'm doing this? Go, sure. And then he hands me a bill for the coffee. I feel like, you cheap so-and-so. Like, I'm spending 3 days here in my off days. And it was hard because he had stuff I couldn't identify. Old Indian and Turkish guns with pearl inlays. They were all antiques. They're all classified as antiques on the certificates. But it said not verified. So I ended up taking over 300 photographs and sending them to the RCMP just to, because I'm putting down antiques, but there was no identifying markings, there's no serial numbers or any of these things. That was the only big one. Most of the time it was pretty cool. You get involved, you get called to go to somebody's house, it's usually a farmer or somebody, and you'd see some pretty awesome rare guns. It'd be kind of nice to come across some old Ross rifles or some, you know, stuff that you heard about but you ever actually saw. So I enjoyed that part. But once they got rid of they allowed people to verify online. So you just called up and you told them what the serial number was. And if it wasn't a serial number, they put one to it. And you would just tell them the barrel length and everything else, and you could actually verify the non-restricted online. So once they started that, I think I've only had to verify one restricted since then. So it saved me a lot of work. But it was all a volunteer network. Nobody got paid for it. We couldn't charge anybody for it. So it's once they allowed verifying online, I think I've got the one phone call and that's it.
I'd be a great verifier. I'd show up and go, yep, that's a gun. Have a nice day.
Well, the good thing was is that people were offering me these things dirt cheap. I got offered a couple of really sweet deals in guns.
Oh, Thomas.
that you flipped and for a profit to a cadet?
Yeah.
No, I never bought any of them. No, I was just there just to verify it, and I said, no, sorry. Most of the time was stuff that I already had, lever actions and shotguns and stuff.
Yeah.
But. Cool. And the people were pretty nice. Once you told them that, look, you know, I'm not working for the RCMP. I'm just doing this to help you. It's my own time, my own money, my own gas. I'm just doing you a favor. So, and anything I see, I don't report. It's not my job. I just give you an FRT number, fill out the form, sign up for you. You submit it, and then they were fine with that. What about you, Kelly? What'd you do with guns this week?
I was off most of the week because I've been sick, so I spent a little time dry firing. I figured if we talked about it last week, I should probably really do it. So I did that. I was dry firing my Glock. I also, Thomas, you posted the babes with bullets.
Babes and bullets.
Yeah.
The politically incorrect name.
Right.
Yes.
You know, if it was a lady that was posting it, it's not politically incorrect. But it's you. I went, oh, God, of course she'd post this.
Well, you know, who was the lady who posted it?
Oh, you mean who's the lady that's in the videos?
Yeah.
Well, it's Kay Michalik.
Yeah, that's why I posted it.
Yeah. Anyways, so they started a boot camp, basically, for women, and it's called Babes with Bullets, and they're putting out training videos on YouTube. So I went through all of them, and they were actually pretty good. Mm. So I put it on the TV while I actually went through every single YouTube video that they had, and I tried it to see if, from a beginner's point of view, how were they, and excuse me, they're pretty good actually, and I learned a couple of things from it too, so yeah, I'd recommend them. So if anybody has maybe a lady that would like to start shooting, they're really, really good to get you started. They talk about things like what to wear, also correct grip, correct trigger pull, all kinds of different things. They talk about AR-15s as well. I didn't pull out the AR-15, but yeah, it's pretty good stuff. So,
and it applies to both genders, except for maybe clothing options, but
yeah, well, the clothing options, one of the things that they did talk about was if you're going to have a holster, have a drop one with that's going to be a little offset, so that if you have hips, it's easier to get to, and also a drop set holster as well. So that's specifically for females. So other than that, everything can be for both males and females. So yeah, went to SFRC yesterday, just walked around, tried out some guns and that too. Kevin picked up some .223 for Appleseed, but I didn't buy anything. So. And I went to the range today, and I'm still sick. So.
I hope you're feeling better.
Yeah, I wanted to practice my standing shooting. Well, so for the AQT, I did a pretty good. I just went straight to shooting, and that I didn't check my zero or anything, and I found that I was shooting to the left, so I decided to zero in, and I was to the left in when I was zeroing in. So I corrected a bit, and then I went back, and I shot pretty good. Everything got into the fives, and excuse me, and that. So, but still, I do tend to shoot a little bit to the left. I check my NPOA, my natural point of aim, in standing, but still, I still shoot a little bit to the left. I noticed that I always do it anyways. I thought it perhaps might be the sling. It might have been a little bit too tight, but no. And that, I got Kevin to check me out just to make sure that I wasn't dragging wood or anything like that. I had a good, everything was fine. So it's just me, just naturally shoot a little bit to the left. So and once I actually corrected the optic a little bit, it was much better. I was all in the fives, and everything was quite tight grouping, so it was good.
I discovered something yesterday.
What?
Neither of my pistols like that Aguila ammunition.
No? What do you mean, neither? You mean your grandpower?
No, the 22-45 Northern Smith & Wesson. I had constant, quite a few failures to feed. I had a couple failures to fire on it. And then I had the cheap Federal Blue Box stuff, the 36 green hollow point, and I put it through a brick of 500 and never had a problem to fire feed or eject on that stuff. But the standard velocity at Gila, I was having feedings, sitting in the feed ramp, I was having rounds not go off. So I had to demonstrate hang fire a few times to the girls. Hmm. Once I switched ammo, I had no problems. It's fine in the rifles. The rifles love it, but for some reason the pistols don't like it. They're the same way with Winchester. The Winchester PowerPoint or the white box stuff, they don't like that stuff either.
Well, we all know that some guns like different ammunition, and it's just one of those, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I explained to them. I said, you know, they all have different diets, and sometimes they just don't feed. They don't like certain ammunition. Same like we're doing the ground power. It really liked the Aguila, even the standard velocity, but it didn't like anything else, the way it was set up with the dual springs. But
No, we knew that already because we had tested them, right?
I was surprised that the Smith & Wesson didn't like it because usually it digests everything, but oh well.
Okay. How you doing there, George?
I'm doing well. I'm just freezing. It's funny. All right, so that brings us to Guns in the News. And Thomas, you're taking story one, correct?
Yep. Story one. Take it away. Defamation by a Nova Scotia justice employee caused havoc in a lady's life, the judge rules. A Nova Scotia Supreme Court judge has awarded a Halifax woman more than $52,000 for defamation she suffered at the hands of a provincial government employee. Ms. Doucette was enrolled in a policing program at Seneca College in 2012 when she applied for a firearms license. The Department of Justice officer assigned to process her application, Mr. David Grimes, had doubts about her suitability. Grimes discovered in the course of his investigation of her license application that she had once worked at a Tim Hortons that was a target of an armed robbery. Since Grimes felt Doucette's account of the incident was suspicious, he told Success College at Dalhousie University Security, where she had applied for a job placement, that Doucette was suspect in an armed robbery. Doucette subsequently sued for defamation, and just before the case went to trial, the province admitted Grimes' allegations were false. The province also admitted that Grimes breached Doucette's privacy by revealing details of her past to supervisors at both schools. His actions were offensive and inexplicable, said Justice Denise Baudreau, wrote in a decision that came out Monday, which awarded Doucette's damages. His task as an investigator for the plaintiff's application for a firearms license, by no measure did he properly accomplish that task. Rather, he used his opportunities presented by his position to cause havoc in life of the plaintiff. Bordeaux awarded Doucette more than $2,600 on special damages for wages that she lost when her first attempt to complete the program at Seneca was stalled. Doucette got $35,000 in general damages for slander and an additional $15,000 for aggravated damages because of Grimm's false accusations. Bordeaux was also dismissive of the letter of apology that Grimm's provided. The words in use in his letter demonstrate Mr. Grimes' difficulty in acknowledging that he, and only he, was the cause of the problem, the judge wrote. I'm further troubled by his testimony that his apology was originally 4 pages long and he feared of being torn apart by counsel. Bordeaux is giving the two sides 20 days to submit arguments at the trial. Doucette's lawyer, David Coles, also asked the court to consider awarding her the $150,000 in court costs.
No. Obviously, she's going to get that.
Oh, I hope so.
And Mr. Grimes, in true government employee fashion, probably got promoted.
Well, I hope he got fired.
Yeah. No, the screw up, move up. That's the slogan.
No, yeah. He divulged somebody's information, and it's against policy to do that. So
he's probably going to get disciplined in some way, or either dismissal or...
Yeah, his discipline will be a larger salary and a bigger office.
Okay.
Well, he had no right giving his opinion to an employer just because he says, you know, she worked there. And then he changed it to she was a suspect because he didn't like her interpretation. That's not his job. He's a firearms officer. He's just supposed to process it. He shouldn't have gotten involved at all. So I'm glad she was successful in the suit.
I hope he did get fired.
Oh, I hope he did too.
That's like gross negligence.
Yep, it is.
And who do you think's paying all this money? Taxpayers. We're paying this money.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
He's not getting sued personally. It's... Wow. No.
Yeah. Well, I guess
that's an assumption on me. The article never says who's actually paying for the damages, but I'm assuming it'll be whoever he works for, right?
Oh, probably. Just like when the CFO goes to court, who do you think pays for the CFOs?
Mm-hmm.
We do. So what do we have for story two, Kelly?
Mm-hmm. Well, story number two is the BC gun smuggler is sentenced in U.S. court. But guess what? He also got sentenced in Canadian court, too. So
double whammy.
Yeah, well, anyways, a 32-year-old man was who bought guns in Washington State and then smuggled them into BC for resale has been sentenced to prison time. Tyler Ryan Cuff, pleaded guilty in October 2015 to one count of dealing firearms with a license and sentenced last week in the U.S. District Court in Spokane for 30 months in custody, followed by 3 years supervised release. Cuff also forfeited firearms, ammunition, and more than 15,000 in Canadian and U.S. currency seized during the searches of his home. According to the plea agreement, that is part of Cuff's U.S. Court file, the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF, learned in December 2012 that Cuff, a resident of Oroville, Washington, and he has dual citizenship, was buying numerous firearms at gun shows. He claimed to be a collector, but was uninterested in the boxes or the accessories that came with the guns, which is unusual for a gun collector, and purchased mostly handguns, none of which were considered particularly collectible. The ATF received information that Cuff was taking the guns into Canada and selling them, and that he'd often exchanged thousands of dollars of Canadian currency for U.S. currency at the time at the U.S. bank. He had minimal earnings in Washington State. He also had a number of friends in the, I can't even pronounce the name of that BC town, so I'm not going to.
Osoyoos?
Yeah.
Osoyoos.
Okay. And he had numerous friends in BC and also crossed into Canada 41 times in a 60-day period in the fall of 2012.
Yeah, that would trigger flags right there.
Yeah. Although it says some of the crossings were work-related. So the ATF worked with gun sellers to set up gun sales that Cuff had requested. Oops, sorry, just hold on a second. My whole entire computer just crashed. Going back.
Do you want me to pick up?
Nope. The ATF worked with gun sellers to set up sales that Cuff had requested and had one of its undercover officers contact Cuff about buying guns. Cuff was in his home in the U.S. Cuff's home in the U.S. was searched during the investigation. Cuff admitted to buying guns, but said he was selling them to Washington residents and denied taking any firearms into Canada. Officers seized 37 pistols, 77 empty gun boxes, and 3 long guns, 109 gun magazines, documents, and a cell phone, and several computers. After the search, Cuff entered Canada, and it's believed that he did not return to the U.S. The plea agreement states that Cuff would typically pay $400 to $600 for guns in the U.S. and then sell them in Canada for 2 or 3 times what he paid. What a jerk. Anyways, it also states that at least 13 of the firearms that Cuff purchased in Washington had been recovered at crime scenes in Canada.
Yes, again. You know who the guns were going to.
Yes, exactly. In BC, the Combined Forces Special Enforcement Unit began looking into Cuff's activities after receiving a tip about him in May 2013. He was living in the place that I can't pronounce at the time. So, in August...
O-S-O-Y-O-O-S.
Yeah, in August 2013, an undercover officer met with Cuff, who, according to the U.S. Court documents, bragged about smuggling guns into Canada from the U.S. and offered to get him an AK-47. Wow. He claimed to have made $100,000 selling guns in Canada. The officer ended up purchasing a Norinco MAC-90 rifle and several steroid kits from Cuff. Cuff was arrested.
Nothing goes better with roid rage than a Mac 90 Norinco, whatever a Mac 90 Norinco is.
So Cuff was arrested in Langley, which is in BC, and charged with 4 weapons offenses. 8 months later, he pled guilty to possessing a firearm, knowing its possession is unauthorized, and manufacturing or transfer of a firearm. Cuff's sentencing is scheduled to take place in early February in provincial court in Surrey. According to Cuff's Washington State plea agreement, the U.S. Sentence will run concurrent with the one imposed in Canada and will be served in the Canadian institution. Thanks a lot. We got to pay for this guy. Like, seriously.
They should pay for half of it since he had dual citizenship.
No, that's not the way it happens. Because of the fact that he was living in Canada, he's got to serve a sentence in Canada and then get...
extradited to the States and then...
Yeah, but he'll be serving it concurrently, so it means he's serving the sentence at the same time. So, like, seriously, man.
So I'd be curious to see what his Canadian sentence is.
Mm.
That'd be coming
up. Me too.
Up.
We'll have to follow up on it in February, see what his sentence was. But...
I leave that in your capable hands, Thomas.
I leave it in Kelly's hands since she wrote the story.
I didn't write it, I just found it.
All right, well, that brings us to what's new in the industry.
Right.
Thomas, take it away.
Well, this there's your little baby. So much stuff at SHOT Show, but the one thing that really caught my eye was Smith & Wesson actually has discontinued the Model 22A, the one that I have, and they've introduced a new pistol called the Victory Pistol, and it's in the current catalog. I haven't seen any listings for it up here. These new guns are disassembled by removing a single screw located under the barrel and for the trigger guard. Once the screw is removed, the gun comes apart for cleaning and easy barrel replacement. The barrel is also removable. It's a match grade barrel, and Smith & Wesson will be offering other barrel lengths in the near future. And actually, Smith & Wesson's already teamed up with Volks Quartzen, and there's a variety of different aftermarket barrels already for the gun. So even though the gun's just starting on the market, there's already an aftermarket prices available. Apparently, the one article I read, the trigger pull is supposed to be like 3.5 pounds, so it should have a half-decent trigger from the factory. It comes with a fiber optic front and rear sights. The rear sight is fully adjustable, and the front sight is replaceable. It has a polymer Picatinny rail that's also included. This I kind of don't like. I would prefer a solid aluminum rail, but companies are cheaping out. That's probably why they changed production of the gun. The frame is made of stainless steel with removable and possibly replaceable polymer grip panels in the future, and the trigger also has a user-adjustable over-travel stop on it. At launch, the gun will be available in three models, the basic model plus two additional models. The first variant has a threaded barrel. Cool. And this gun is identical to the base model with the exception of having 1/2 and 28 thread for the addition of suppressor or muzzle brake, since we can't have good things like sound suppressors up here. And the second variation has a Kryptek Highland camouflage pattern on the barrel and receiver. And the camo gun has a standard barrel. Standard barrel being 5.5 inches, gun weighs 36 ounces, comes with two 10-round magazines. The bolt, frame, barrel are also all stainless steel, with it has a satin stainless steel finish on it. Now, the price, the base model is, now these are U.S. prices right now. I haven't been able to find any Canadian prices, so just add 30% to whatever these are. The base is $409, the threaded and the camo models are $428 and $459 respectively. Give it a few more months before they actually come up here. Just a few thoughts on it. I actually called Smith & Wesson, and yes, I did download the manual, Kelly. You can get the manuals online.
Attaboy.
The owner manual contains no exploded diagrams or part numbers, so even though every Smith & Wesson model made after 1989 has a lifetime service warranty, I still like to know the name of the part number, the name of the part and the number if anything needs replacing. The previous model that it's replacing, the 22, didn't require any tools for takedown. Neither does the model 41, but the Victory does require a tool, and it's not included. Where the older model had a Buck Series type of action where it was open on each side. The Victory doesn't. It has an ejection port on the right side only, and all the controls are only right-handed. Both the guns, the discontinued model and the Victory, have magazine disconnects, which I hate. And I assume that changing the mag release from the front strap, because the old one had a front strap in the... or the mag release was in the front strap of the 22A series. The Victory's changed it, and they put the design to underneath the trigger guard. Unfortunately, because they repositioned the mag release, none of your old 22A magazines will fit your Victory. The Victory all proprietary. So if you've got another Smith & Wesson, it won't run it. But I am glad to see that they repositioned the mag release to a more traditional location instead of the front strap. So it's a little less user-friendly for Southpaws, but it got great reviews. It's supposed to be an incredibly little accurate. And I've included some pictures of Volks Quartzen has a fluted compensated barrel out. They also have a carbon fiber barrel with the threading on it. And, of course, as I said, there are suppressors available for this model. So... hopefully we'll see it on the market shortly. I like it.
Yeah, it has, the sights on it are quite high, are they not?
That's what I noticed. The sight over board is really, really high because at the back the action seems pretty high.
Yeah, it looks like a nice gun, but yeah, and it's more traditional with the mag release. Not too bad. You can't use the other mags that you had for your old guns in it, but.
Well, the one downfall with this gun, whenever we train people, all the new shooters at the club, they're all expecting, you put anybody who's never shot one before and try to get them to find the mag release, they can never find it. Everybody's quite surprised it's in the front strap. And really, it's a whole different mechanic trying to release that.
Yeah, it's nothing quick, so.
Yeah, you have to end up using your second little finger, and it's not quick, and you really have to put force into that gun to seat the magazine properly, but right. They're accurate.
And the price probably on it is anywhere from $410 to $460, so we know that it's going to be at least $650, $700
at least, and it's going to be substantially more than a discontinued model.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'll have to actually shoot one before I get an opinion on it, but Smith and Wesson usually make pretty good 22s.
It'll be a while before it gets up here, and for 22s, I'm not paying $750. Sorry. Nope.
All right.
Considering I've got one on order for $750, but
you know because you have more money than brains.
You know what? 22. I'd really like. I got to play with the Smith and Wesson came out with their revolver. They put it to a 10-round revolver, and because you've got so many chambers in the cylinder. When you cock it, the rotation's really fast because the chambers are really close together. Man, it did have a sweet trigger. It came from the factory with like a 2-pound trigger on it. But it's over $1,000 for this revolver. But the 22, the Smith & Wesson 22 revolver is awesome.
Cool.
But I'm not selling two guns to buy another gun, so I'm not getting it.
Yeah, $1,000 is just crazy for a 22. Anyways.
Okay, so that brings us to the interview portion of the show, which Thomas and Kelly will be doing in a couple hours, and I will drop it in here, so we will catch you guys on the flip side of the interview. So enjoy, and we'll be right back to close out the show.
And we'd like to thank Brian Sheets and Jason Groves from Valkyrie Defense for joining us this evening to talk about some training. Now, last week when we were talking to Pat Harrison, I brought up the CERT, or the next level training pistol, which is a CERT training pistol. Now, I know that both Brian and Jason have these, so I thought it'd be a great idea to get you guys on to talk about it. So, can you give us a little bit of information about what a CERT training pistol is and what the benefits are, or just give us a little bit of a review for it. Ryan?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
So CERT pistol. CERT stands for Shot Indicating Resetting Trigger. What we use them for and what our biggest thing, one, you have the ability to train with them. Two, it is a great tool for instruction. And that's mainly what we use these for nowadays. Okay. So while standing in front of a classroom full of people, it's a lot better for us to pull out a red CERT training pistol that's inert and only shoots lasers, freaking laser beams, and then we don't have to run the risk of accidents or negligence discharges, inside a classroom setting, which is really the biggest feature that we have gained with these as instructors.
Now, you can shoot it anywhere.
Yeah. But as shooters, we can use these to train as well. What we really like about them is we can diagnose almost what someone's trigger, what they're doing trigger-wise. If they're not applying the fundamentals on the trigger press, we can pretty much diagnose that right away. When we say punch out, so the sight alignment, trigger press, okay, and then you press it, and we can pretty much diagnose from that point if they understand proper sight alignment, or if they understand a proper trigger press. With a CERT pistol, if you improperly press the trigger, what's going to happen is you'll draw more of a line, so that you'll have a line instead of a dot. And then, obviously, whatever direction that line is heading to is where your impact of your round is going to be from your point of aim. So, you catch what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You get instant digital feedback.
Yes.
It's also great, so when we're watching somebody shoot,
and whether they're anticipating the shot or slapping the trigger or something like that. Yet we can recreate it with the cert, and they can see it, and we'll do it two or three times, and yeah.
So you get the visual feedback from it.
A lot of the new shooters don't know what they're doing. It's hard for them to understand when they're standing on the line.
Right. Yeah. Can you give?
So when they see it, it's easier.
Can you give a little description? Like, these are available in different models, correct?
Yes.
That will end
They weren't for the longest time. For the very long time, they were only available as Glock 17. Glock 17.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they were made as. Now, supposedly, they are supposed to be coming back out with a M&P version.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly don't think that it is on their website yet. I'm looking right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. You can pick a polymer, a steel slide, and the color of the slide, and red or green lasers, and that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. There's no M&P offering.
Yeah, they've been saying now since I've had mine for since 2013. The amount of money this thing has saved me in ammo costs, being able to train and drive practice and, you know, on targets in my basement is probably paid for itself time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2013, they told me at SHOT Show that there will be M&Ps out, which at the time I didn't run an M&P. But then the following year after that, then I switched over to the Smith & Wesson M&P line and carried a full size for about a year, just kind of playing and seeing what I liked and what I didn't like and comparing models and stuff. But they just came out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook within the last 2 months saying that M&Ps are available and going to be shipping soon. But they've said that again for 3 years. So we'll see where we go with that.
Right.
Well, hopefully soon.
I'm thinking that's maybe they waited till SHOT Show was over and just send everything out.
Yeah, I looked a lot, and I did see that they had a picture in M&P, but I didn't see if anything was actually available.
Mm-hmm. So they'll fit into your regular holster as well, right?
Absolutely. Any Glock 17, Glock 19, any Glock holster it'll fit into. Like I said, they're modeled after the Glock 15, or Glock 15, Glock 17. I used I did most of my practice with the Concealment Solutions Sidewinder is what I carried with for years, and this will even fit in my Glock 19 appendix new Osu appendix carry holster as well, so I can still get dry practices off that with the 19 holster.
It also has 6 trigger settings, so you can really adjust it to what you normally used to.
Yeah, and the idea behind that is train with a heavier trigger, and then your carry gun then feels a little lighter. You know, then you can be more accurate, and you also grip strength is something that's really overlooked in the shooting, I think, by newer shooters. So if you jack that pressure up on that trigger and you get that grip strength and that hand strength down, then it's a lot easier to pull triggers more effectively or efficiently. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something always that I always like too. I trained with that heavier trigger setting, so it always helped me let down the road when I'm trying to press off, you know, to practice with my carry gun that has a lighter trigger. Then I always seem to be a little more accurate with it. So.
I can ask you a question.
Sure.
The trigger take-up indicator, is that very useful for you?
I don't use the take-up indicator. If anybody doesn't understand what that is, as soon as you prep the trigger, you get to a certain degree, it actually lights up one trigger, or I'm sorry, one laser, and then as you break the shot, then it pops on another laser. So you actually have two laser beams hitting the wall, or two dots on the wall. Now, I didn't like training with that because it distracted me. I wanted to concentrate more on what my sights were doing, not and less on what that the reset indicator or the trigger indicating light was doing. Because I found myself adjusting my point of aim to where that was at versus where my sights were at. After saying that, I've had this thing now for 3 years, and I've used it a ton. My trigger indicator light does not work anymore. There's an on-off switch on the top of it. No matter which direction I flip that, it still doesn't light up.
And it costs you $100 for that option.
Yeah, and it's getting sent back. Well, it's been needing to get sent back because, like I said, these have been used a lot. Jason's and mine both have been used a ton. and I think, were we doing running a drill or some kind of like demonstration, and we knocked the front sight off mine. So, I mean, we're not easy on them, you know.
How are the mags holding up?
Mags are fine. They're just fine. No problem with those. Yours, Jason, yours, if you bump it, it'll shift on the point of impact, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I've been meaning to take the slide off and see what's going on under the hood, but my laser moves around a little bit. It has some travel in it. When it gets thrown in a, you know, it gets thrown in a Pelican case and taken all around the state, it moves. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think it's something that's beneficial for somebody who's new to shooting?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with people getting them to look at it and understand the benefits, because they're $239 pretty much, you know, that excludes shipping and handling as well. You know, so getting them to look at that and saying, wow, I can almost buy another handgun for this, and it's not even a real handgun. So you got to get them to understand the benefits that are there for the training you can get out of it.
Yeah, and that's the American price. I was looking at them up here, and it's around $400 for one here.
Okay. Right. I think you can also get a discount. The base pistol for $239.
Sorry, Jason, what were you saying?
I said, I think you can also get a discount if you're an instructor.
Right. Yeah.
And, Brian, they have a one-year warranty, so you're SOL.
Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome.
Well, they list the base pistol at $239. The green laser is another $100, and if you want a silver slide, it's another $100. So you get the base model for $239. So it's not that expensive. You can; it's still cheaper than a new gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they were offering a zombie green one for a while too.
They were. That one until they realized how dumb zombie green was.
Yeah, I had a look at. There's some reviews online, YouTube videos, and I saw a zombie green one there.
Oh, so you can get red and purple. So
yes.
That's much better. Purple Rugers.
Anyways, I'm coughing. So let's talk a little bit about training, because that's what you guys do, right?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Yeah, you just had a training. What did you do this weekend?
Trained.
More training.
What course were you running?
Just concealed carry course. Just regular concealed carry course.
Okay.
Spread the gospel.
As far as the certs go, I mean, we don't really, we pretty much stick with the rules of firearms when we're using them, unless we get into running a tool or drill or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the only time we'll actually laser each other with them.
Okay. So what about actual training, though? We were talking about dry firing last week, and this week we were talking about cert training, and that. What else? Like, you guys run training as a for courses for everybody. So, what are the benefits of training, and why should people actually plan for their training, or, you know, why should they actually go and train?
We found it's better, you know, to pick a goal. You know, like what do you want to accomplish? If you want to accomplish, say, draw times, go to the range and set out a plan. You know, don't go to the range and just be like, I'm going to go to the range and shoot, because then you get to the range and you're like, I don't know what to do. So have a plan before you get there of what you want to accomplish. You know, I like setting short-term goals for myself and long-term goals. You know, if anybody follows me on Facebook or Instagram, they kind of see that I've kind of started getting into this, into bullseye shooting, where it's not my club. They don't really do it as a competition. There's no trophies, no giving out. It's pretty much you're playing against yourself. And that's how I've kind of, my long-term goal is I want to use this each week by week. I want to, you know, try to beat my score from last week. Okay. The drills are the same. The distances are the same. Everything is the same. It's all about me. So it's my application of the fundamentals. My long-term goal is to eventually move from 22 pistols at 25 yards to bring in my centerfire concealed handgun that I carry every day and be able to still compete the same way. So is it more difficult? Yes. Is that something that I'm going to have to work hard to do? You know, yes. Can it be done? Absolutely. 25 yards with a, you know, 4 to 4.5 inch pistol, striking fire pistol, it's doable to score decent scores with that. So but in long term, that's my goal, is to do drills and or do these little short competitions with myself. And so I go to the range each week with this plan that's what I'm working on. Now, if we go on the weekend and say I want to practice my reloads and my split times, I want to bring those down and kind of get a good baseline on those. Well, I'm going to go online, I'm going to find some good drills that are multiple shot, and then include a magazine change. So what we do, maybe what's called a 2x2 drill, where you draw, fire two, reload, fire two. And then I'll use the shot timer, I'll look at my splits, I'll look at my reload times, and then my overall time together. So understanding how to go to the range and make your time worth it. We see a lot of people just go to the range and just, call it ballistic masturbation, where they just stand there, pop off rounds, and they're just it's making, they're turning money to noise, essentially.
Right.
And so we've kind of been on a mission here in the last couple of classes, is try to get people to understand really what you need to do, how to completely take that time and
how to create your own training methodology and improve and track.
Exactly.
And keep track of things.
So if they decide, let's say they decide to take a training course with you guys, they can take that information and go back to the range and basically set themselves up with some different exercises or skills to do to improve.
Yeah. Right? I mean, well, you tell us. You took the class.
Yeah.
Did you walk away with some ideas that you understood a little bit, like, okay, maybe here's some things I need to work on in
Absolutely.
A defensive manner, and these are in context to a defensive handgun use or usage.
Yeah.
So that,
one
that's
thing that... one thing that I learned, I didn't need to work on my math skills, but but
critical
yeah,
thinking under stress, that's what that's all about.
Yeah,
right.
But you're absolutely right.
It works.
Yeah.
Yeah. All you did that day with us was skill building.
Right.
So we took some things that were complex, broke them down into small pieces, and then you mastered those pieces and then put them all together at the end of the day.
Right.
That's all that we usually have people do.
Right. So Jason. So let's say somebody is trying to actually figure out how to, let's say there's four different courses in their area and they want to take it, but how do they figure out who they want to take it with? Like one person offers such and such, or maybe it's a better price than say Valkyrie Defense or whatever. So how do they figure out who's the best deal? Do you know what I mean? Or who's the best for them?
Oh, we hear that a lot. We hear, we hear questions about price a lot, but it really just comes down to training and what do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? Do you want to learn some skill sets, or as opposed to just maybe running some basic drills, doing the Magpul video class?
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on what you want to do, and it's kind of hard just looking at a course description online. So you really need to find people who's actually taking the courses. They could give you a real opinion. So it's not always easy.
Well, yeah, then do we not have a prize from Valkyrie Defense for the charity shoot? So somebody could win a course.
They could.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was top secret still.
No, we're starting to release stuff.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah, you got the online sign up now.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
I'll edit this. Timestamp.
No, tonight we were actually going to be talking about it.
We talked about it on the charity on the page. So, we welcome them on as a sponsor.
Yeah. So thanks for that, you guys.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. We're there for you. We appreciate everything. You keep bringing us on here and letting us ramble and offer some stuff to people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. We really appreciate it. So it's the least we could do.
Oh, that's great. We really appreciate it. So somebody's going to benefit from it.
I hope so. I hope someone will, from up there will come down and take another class with us or have us back up there. So that'd be fun.
Having up here would be great.
Yeah.
I was told that I would have to quit to be able to come to that, so I'm considering it. I'm considering it.
Whenever you guys have the time, it'd be appreciated.
Well, I don't have to quit.
Don't quit on us.
Yeah.
I think it's... we'll talk later about that.
Good. Okay.
Is there anything else you guys can think about in regards to training or what people should... Like, what should people look to get from training? Should they look to get all the problems fixed in the world? Or They only have to go once, and everything is done. Or
they need to understand that shooting is a diminishing skill. You really need to keep your finger on trigger. A CERT pistol is very good at that. You know, you can stand in your basement. You can put. What I used to do is put post-it notes up, and I would run build drills, or I would run certain drills. There's a couple books out there that you can get. One is called The Champion Shooting Guaranteed Results in 15 Minutes a Day, and it's written by Ben Stoger.
Okay.
It is a very good book, and there's a ton of drills in there to dry fire practice. So, I mean, I basically took that entire book, and I went through from front to back, and I actually saw some serious gains in my shooting. It was amazing. You know, getting people to realize that you got to put in the time.
You got to realize what your goals are. And
yeah,
you gotta stick to them.
Small bites here and there, and don't expect to become a grandmaster shooter in less than, you know, by the end of the year. Don't make that a goal. Make a goal that's reasonable and obtainable. You know, and like I said, make one long term goal, but then make some other goals, that are on that road to obtaining that end goal is what you want. So you can keep pushing yourself in the right direction. When choosing a training company, understand that a lot of times you get what you pay for. Not all the time, sure. But most times. We get that a lot. Like Jason said, we had that a couple weeks ago. Why are you guys $25 more than your competitors? What's so great about you? Well, I mean, you got to really research. Go and ask your instructor, you know, or that instructor that you're considering, what was the last class that you took? And if they tell you that 15 years ago, whenever they got their NRA certification, that was the last class that they took because they know everything and nothing really changes, then maybe you should try to find the guy who's taken some recent classes and is kept very up to date on all the latest, you know, information and the latest studies and the latest techniques. That might be, maybe that's why they might be a little bit more. So, you know, you have to consider that. But don't, you know, research, talk to people that have taken classes from those people and see what they have to say.
If the instructors wear shoulder holsters, don't go to them.
Yes.
Cross-jaw shoulder holsters. Oh, my God.
So if you have your CCW, it's the next step to take some practical training.
You have to. You really
do. Yeah, you can't just stop basic stuff.
If you want to take this life seriously, and, you know, some people I just don't think they know. They think about it any more than just taking their basic pistol class to get their concealed carry license, and that's it. They've never tested their system. They've never tested their ammo and pistol combination. They have no idea if it's going to work or not. And we've had people in that situation come to our advanced class, and what they've been carrying absolutely does not work at all, and they've been carrying that system for 2 years.
Flat out, yeah. I mean, that's happened more than once. You know, just this weekend at this class, in the last couple classes that we've had, forethought is really starting to become a theme for us as well, where we're trying to get people to think further ahead than just buy gun, buy holster, put it on my hip, and I'm good to go. A lot of people, for some reason, think that a gun is a magic talisman, and that sticking one on your hip or in your pocket or in that shoulder holster is going to keep you safe, you know, and it's not. You got to understand I'll be honest. You know, there are hundreds of people out there that have defended their life with zero training. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you right now that I would rather be good than lucky. Okay?
Good point.
That's how I am. And that's why, 5 or 6 years ago, I started doing training before Valkyrie Defense was even thought about. I started training because I realized, wow, there's a lot more to this than what I thought. And we were all that, you know, like that at one time. Everyone starts out somewhere, you know, but then some people get their eyes opened up and realize that there's more to carrying a firearm than just a 12 or 8 hour class, depending upon what state you live in. You know, even four. There's some states that only require four, and then there's some states that don't require any training.
What does your state require?
We're 8 hours. We used to be 12. March 23rd of last year, they changed it from 12 hours to 8 hours. Now, what did we do differently? Nothing. we actually are still taking 12 hours of information that we were barely fitting into 12 hours, and then now we're still cramming it into 8.
Condensing the lesson.
I mean, efficiency. You know, we actually had a former police officer sit in one of our classes. Right, it was one of the last 12-hour classes we taught, right, Jason?
Yeah.
It was in Delaware, and he said, "How are you guys?" You know, at the end of the day, we do our debrief. Like Kelly knows what we're talking about in the debrief, and he said, "How are you guys, you know, going to take this information?" He said, "You basically taught me a 40-hour APOTA course and condensed it down into 12 hours. What are you going to remove in order to make it fit in 8? And we said nothing, and he laughed. He said, "You taught me more than I learned in that APOTA course, plus you expanded more on use of force law than I even got at the academy. How are you guys going to condense?" You know, and we're like, "No, we're not going to remove anything. It's going to be shorter breaks or in working lunches," which it already was. But, you know, now it's even shorter. You know, we might just say, "Hey, anybody needs to go to the restroom, go to the restroom. We're going to keep on going here. We'll catch you back up when you get back." You know,
to be honest, it's never 8 hours. It's always 9.
Oh, yeah. But oh, my God. Yeah.
And people, nobody's really itching to leave. They stick around after. So
when people start seeing exactly how much there is to it, they're like, "Holy crap." And then the questions start coming. We had some very good questions at this last class that weren't even part of really the curriculum. It's more of the stuff that we do in our CAC class, our advanced course, when we talk about aftermath. What to do after the shooting, after the noise stops, then what? And this guy actually had, you know, enough forethought and realized that this isn't just, like I said earlier, buy that gun, buy a holster, put on hip, save the world. And he actually, it dawned on him, like, "Oh my gosh, if the noise, you know, once the noise and smoke clears, now what?"
There's no ramifications.
Yeah, and it's just that, not even that, it's just the aftermath portion of it. You know, how do I separate myself from being the target of another concealed carrier who didn't see everything go down? You know, you're standing there holding a gun, a smoking gun, and there's a person laying on the floor doing a very good impression of a victim, mm-hmm. right? So how do you separate yourself? And that's, you know, like we said, that's, and if a student is in our class, and even though it's not our advanced course, if it's our basic course and someone has enough forethought in understanding that maybe this is something I need to know, we're going to spend 15, 20 minutes on that subject to make sure everybody understands, like, "Hey, you know, this is probably what you need to consider." And like I said, it's stuff we talk about, if asked in the basic. And we're not going to leave anybody – no one leaves any of our classes with unanswered questions. That's really how we are. I mean, we've done our 12-hour course. We've stayed 14 for them. Where people just start asking questions and we answer them until we're done.
Right.
You know? So
a lot of the training is training with your firearm or your gun, but a lot of it is also the basically the talking about it as well. I know that when I took the course with you, we had a lot of questions in that as well. But you guys are very good at explaining. Or if somebody does have a question, trying to get the answers for them as well. So,
well, I think Jason said it really good over the weekend at the class. I mean, we're just scratching the surface of a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. I mean, that's for the time frame constraints that we have and being able to touch on some of the stuff, we can't really expand as much further into it as we used to. But Jason told him last week, the reading list, the reading list for concealed carry is, you know, the book, that list is about 4 feet thick.
Oh. Well, how many rounds do they have to bring to one of your classes?
Our basic class is about 150. Like I say, that's just fundamentals. We do all fundamentals on that class, and our theory behind that is we have people that have literally never touched a gun before in that class. Okay, so what we want to do by the end of the day is get them confident in their ability to handle that firearm, load, unload, make safe, and make decent groups, okay? Make good hits. If we took him out and stuck him at 25 yards and said, "Here you go, show us what you got," and they aren't able to hit nothing, you know, by the end of the day, is that doing us a favor or the gun community a favor by discouraging someone enough to where they don't ever want to shoot a gun ever again?
No.
It's not. So we focus very much on the fundamentals and getting people able to make good groups and make good hits. Now, we do that for probably half the shooting portion. You know, Kelly will tell you, we started out with fundamentals, right? On, you know, correct, during your CAC class?
Yeah.
Yeah. So right. Our reason behind that is it don't matter if it is a advanced pistol handling class, a vehicle, you know, close quarter, a VCQC, vehicle close quarters combat class, Navy SEAL training extraordinaire, whatever, everything still comes back to the fundamentals. And if you don't have a proper sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger press, and while maintaining that through a trigger press, it doesn't matter. So we always start with fundamentals, and that's why we focus so hard on those at the, you know, on our basic classes. People want to do the sexy, cool stuff, but at the same time, completely ignore the boring fundamental stuff, and that's why people don't get any better.
Well, you have to be able to hit your target.
Yeah, that's, you would think, point. Right? Yeah, that's, you would think. But we see a lot of guys that come into our, you know, CAC class or an advanced class that they're more concerned about draw times than they are making good hits. And that's unfortunate. You know, that's where we come in with our training methodology and say, hey, you know, here's some stuff that you need to work on, and here's why.
I think it's getting better, though. We don't have to spend a lot of time telling people how bad it is out there because they already know. And they're coming to us. They're coming to us on, you know, what do I, just tell me everything I need, and we're trying. But it's a lot.
Yeah.
And just exposing people to, like I said, scratching the surface, or, you know, giving them that one little teaspoon of information, and just exposing them to what use of force is and Castle Doctrine and all these things that they've never heard of.
And or they have huge misconceptions of, too.
They do. And we've spent a lot of time fixing those and fighting that battle.
Oh, my God.
I think that if somebody has quality training, they'll want to actually continue on that training path as well. So I think that, you know, when we went down to you to Ohio and took some training with you, it sparked an interest in other training as well with me, and I know with Kevin as well. So
I really think that basic class, if it can be instilled into the people right away, that you always need more training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that that's better for down the road. People are more willing to go take a class. But if they're going to a place that just says, yeah, this is really all I ever took, you know, or the, you know, when they ask their instructor, what classes do you take? Well, I took an instructor course 13 years ago. That's all I'm good. I'm good to go. You know, and then they're like, oh, well, I guess this is all I really need to then. You know, if someone comes to us and says, you know, what's the next step? We'll tell them, yeah, we have another class too, but hey, you know, the context of your life, if you're, you know, if you drive a car a lot, here's maybe a place where you can go that they do vehicle combatives. You know, they focus very much on vehicle combatives. Or, you know, and so we try to push people not only to us, but also in other directions as well, to help them as much as they can.
Now, can people bring a regular holster, or do they have to bring a concealed carry holster to one of your courses?
Kelly came down, you guys had your open rig holsters, right?
Yeah, we had open. Yeah.
We recommend people a lot of times just to carry, bring what you carry, okay? The reason being is because you would be so surprised, very surprised how many people have a concealment rig or a concealment carry system. It's what we call the gun holster, the belt, the magazine carrier, and all that other stuff. We call that the system, that they have never drawn their handgun out of their holster. Ever. And it's weird to me, you know, but they're just like, it's there, I know where it's at, I'll get to it. Well, then they show up, and then it's like they realize, oh, maybe I can't get to that stuff, or maybe there's a flaw, and I need to rethink this. So that's why we tell them, if they wanted to bring their concealed carry holster and an outside the waistband holster that they wanted to, you know, use as well, that's fine with me. You know, okay. We recommend use your concealed carry rig or system. Mm-hmm. So,
or if you're Canadian,
if you have one,
if you have one, and like I said, I told you guys whatever you're more than likely to find your gun in, right? I said bring it.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys did great. You know.
Yeah.
So
it was fun.
You can buy concealed carry holsters up here. There's not a big market for them.
Yeah.
And we can order them up from the States.
True, but we can't go around and wear them.
If you have a CCW.
Sure you can, you just don't get caught. Right?
Let's go un-American.
Don't get caught. No, we can't say that. No.
What's illegal? It's just a sick bird, right? Illegal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a bad joke, because my grandpa always used that on me. Sorry.
Illegal. So, you guys got some upcoming courses you want to promote?
we got a couple basic concealed carry classes coming up. But right now, we're looking at the weather and seeing that it's beautiful outside in late January and early February. And
craziness.
Yeah, and the crazy is going to stop at some point, and we're worried. So
we're going to pay for all this.
Yes, and that's what we're kind of leery on really planning classes right now out, because we're going to pay for it in the end here at some point. We did kind of pay for it two weeks ago, so...
We've held classes in 3 or 4 feet of snow, and nobody's really into Arctic warfare. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can
understand. You have to have a few matches in the snow. It's not fun.
It's the learning stops.
Yeah.
From
safety.
Right. Yeah. Well, the last 2 weeks ago, it was down to like 20 outside, which wasn't bad for us because we're kind of used to it being outside standing in it, but it's the people who don't have outside day jobs that are like, you know, like the lady who was the jewelry store clerk, she was a little cold. So, you know, like Jason said, the learning stops at a certain point, and then there was another lady who toughed it out running a 38, sub-nose 38, and she shot until her hands were purple almost. And she just said, I don't understand why this hurts so much. And then we explained, you know, kind of how the handgun works and what a reciprocating slide really helps with, you know, mitigating recoil and the feel. And she's like, well, I don't know why my son told me to buy this then. I'm going to go home
because
and kick his
butt. Because it's her son.
Hey, we even had to the lady show. We even had Masada Yub say he's never coming to Cleveland in January again.
Yes, he did. Oh my God. Yeah, I thought Paul Carlson was going to lose a friend that day.
Or his deposit on the room.
Yes, true too.
That's another story.
Ohio in the middle of winter.
Yeah, it was a blizzard out, man. I'm surprised we even made it up to Cleveland for that one. God. So
you do have some. So the best way for anybody to contact you if they decided they want to come down to Ohio and do a course is just on Facebook?
Facebook, or you can go to our website, and there's a contact tab there. That contact tab will email both Jason and I, and we'll get you fixed up. We're thinking March, about mid-March, we're going to start running CAC classes. We talked about one CAC class a month this year because the demand is getting out there, and thanks to shows like you guys are having us on, letting us ramble and sound extremely smart for, you know, 40 or 50 minutes. You know, that's getting us out, and we're getting a lot of people really interested. These last couple classes that we've had, people are saying, yeah, whenever you have that first class, you let us know, we're going to be there. The thing is with our CEC class is, you know, we like small, intimate courses or classes. Where we can get a lot of one-on-one time and a lot of people. So those classes, we don't really like to go above 10. But we'll make exceptions. I mean, if you bring a group of 15, you know, we have assistant instructors that come. Kelly got to meet a couple of them. We'll have them there ready to rock and roll. And, yeah, you can meet our friend Donald, who's a fun guy.
So CAC, what other courses do you offer?
Our basic pistol.
Yeah, we're writing up some shotgun and rifle courses now, just because so many people have been buying those and looking for training, and we want to set them down the right path on that too. So
yeah, good to hear. There's a lot to writing a course than just, like, you know, a lot of people think we just like walk out there and just wing it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to it.
It's a lot of weekends for us actually doing the course and trying to refine things. And,
yeah. Yeah, our very close friends get a lot of free training.
Yeah, we'll run free classes on them first. So.
Yeah, okay. They're our guinea pigs.
Just let us know when. We'll be there.
Okay, all right. That's fine. Come on down. You can tell us exactly how bad we suck.
No, that's not the case. I had a great time last time. Anything else you guys want to leave us with before you give us our quick review on the Smith & Wesson victory there, Brian?
I have one more thing on the CERT pistols. If you're going to get one, there's some other things that you can get to make it kind of interactive. I think we talked about one in the beginning. There's a program that you can get for your computer where it'll, you know, track your times and your shots, and you can run some drills and things. Laser Light makes a lot of products. Laser Light also makes one called Laser Plinking Cans. And they basically look like little beer cans that have a sensor on the front. And when you hit that sensor with a laser, a little plunger in the bottom jumps out and it falls over like you really shot it. We bring those to class once in a while. Yeah, and people like them. And they're relatively inexpensive, too. So,
that's a good idea. It sounds like fun.
I believe the computer system is called LASR, Laser, the one that Jason was talking about. And you need is your computer and the software, and you need a webcam. And then you just face your webcam. You can actually highlight the A-zone hits on your targets, and then you can run your drills. It times you. You know, it basically turns your entire computer into a shot timer and shot caller for you. So you can go back through and it'll tell you if you miss, if you got an A-zone hit or not, and you can do all that stuff. It's really crazy. Pretty cool technology. I got to play with it one down in SHOT Show, and it's pretty cool.
It's also down there on the bottom of the CERT website.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yep.
Cool. I haven't seen it. Awesome. Yep. There it is.
Okay. Anything else, Kelly?
No, I just wanted to know if Brian wanted to talk about his playing with the Smith & Wesson Victory that he had a chance to review.
Yeah,
the one we talked about last week.
Yeah, no, we talked about it this week.
This week? Oh, yes. We haven't put the show yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
Yeah, I got to play with one. I shoot Bullseye, like I said earlier, on Thursday nights, and one of the guys picked one up, and I got to play with it a little bit. I was impressed. I mean, as an entry level gun into like the sport of bullseye or target shooting, I believe it's a very viable option. It's a very cost effective way to get into it. It was accuracy out of the box was pretty good. Trigger was pretty comparable to my Buckmark. But I shoot what's called a Buckmark URX. It's the 7.25-inch barrel. I have that with a red dot optic on the top, and I've seen my scores with that climb pretty good. I've actually, I think the last match I shot, I had a 586 or 587 out of 600 on it, so I only dropped a few shots. So yeah, so I'm pretty happy with it. But what I'm seeing with what I saw with this is it's a shorter barrel, yes, but what you get with this Smith & Wesson Victory is you're getting a lot of aftermarket support already. I believe it is, well, Quartzen already, as soon as they announced, Smith & Wesson announced the gun, they said, oh, by the way, Volkortzen already makes an upper for it, and I think they had a lot of back and forth on the development for those target barrels, and they're even threaded for suppressor and all that. So it's a very viable. I mean, it's comparable to, like you say, your Mark III's that you see a lot of people shooting on these bullseye competitions. And like I say, when I say bullseye competitions, this is more of like just club level stuff. This isn't like the pros. These guys they're not shooting Walther GSPs or whatever they're called. You know, like the are all crazy. You know, $2,200, $2,500 target pistols with, you know, like what. Half pound triggers and all the stuff like that. These guys are just, you know, hobbyists they're just old guys who want to get away from their wives for a night and give them an excuse to sit around and bull crap and tell lies. That's why I like to go, because that's kind of fun to watch too.
Yeah, so, I used to shoot bullseye. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it.
I've always lusted after a Model 41.
Yeah. About $1,800 brand new right now. Yeah. You know, I was pretty disappointed when Smith & Wesson, you know, can't it was like as soon as I said, okay, I know what I want. I want a Smith & Wesson 22A. And then I go to Smith & Wesson's site to get all the information off of it, and it's gone. And so I knew something was coming. I just didn't know what, because the only thing that was left on there was their Model 41. And then, you know, who really wants to spend $1,800 on a 22 pistol? I don't. I can't justify that.
It'd be nice, but I couldn't rationalize the expense.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like I said, this buck mark that I have is doing everything that I would want it to do, and I guarantee you that if anybody buys one of these Victories, they're not going to be disappointed with it. I've seen a lot of people online saying, oh my God, that grip just looks so unwieldy. And honestly, when you get it in your hand, it doesn't feel bad at all. I was pleasantly surprised. But if you go back and look at the 22As, they had a pretty thick and kind of oddly shaped grip as well. So I think it's kind of a characteristic that Smith & Wesson has on their target pistols, honestly. But I didn't think it felt bad at all. So
I've got the Tallow edition, and it's the grip on it's massive.
Yeah.
Absolutely massive.
Yeah.
And I had to tape it. But it's a nice gun. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think this will be a bad option for anybody wanting to, you know, stick their toe into bullseye shooting and really, you know, really figuring out those fundamentals. I mean, that's what I've kind of said for a while. If you want to learn how to draw fast, you talk to the USPSA guys or the IPSC guys. If you want to learn how to apply the fundamentals extremely well, you go talk to the bullseye guys. You know, each little subsect of sport that we have, you know, the IDPA, the USPSA, IPSC, bullseye, or target shooting guys, they each have their own specialty, and if you can kind of get in and figure out where you need to improve and kind of get with those guys, you'll figure out really quick how to master the art of shooting, I guess. It's almost like a martial art, honestly.
You know, it's boring compared to action pistols, but you're right. The basic, just teaching somebody bullseye, just giving them time on target is a far better way to go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen some guys come in. I've had some friends like, hey, I'm going to shoot bullseye. You know, you want to come? And they show up, and they're like, wow, that's a little more challenging than I expected. And then they, you know, once you do it, you get kind of hooked. And that's, you know, I'm sure Trevor is already, like, turning it off, going, no talking about bullseye. That is boring, you know. But hey,
that's
guess
where
what?
Old men go to shoot. That's what he says.
It's right, you know. I'm starting to act as old as I feel, honestly. I'm going and I'm sitting and watching these little guys smoke their cigars and tell lies and stand in one spot and pull triggers. That's what I like. That's what I'm getting.
But you're learning precision shooting compared to moving fast and hitting a target.
Yeah, and then you know what? Whenever I do start to go back to hit the range and we start running timers and stuff like that again, guess what? My speed, I have the speed. I needed a subset of the fundamentals is what I saw in myself. I really need to go back to the fundamentals and improve. I was making the hits, but I wanted to make the better hits. Instead of making body shots at, you know, 25 yards, I want to be able to make the headshot boxes at 25 yards on demand. And that's how I knew I was going to have to do it, was go back and refine my fundamentals and sights and triggers each time. So that's why I did it. That's why I'm doing it. So far, so good. So.
All right.
Wrap it up, Kelly.
Yep. Well, thank you guys for coming on and talking about the cert pistol, and also about training, and then also about the Smith & Wesson Victory. So I'll be seeing you guys in March, right?
I'll be there.
Okay. Jason, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. no pressure. Anyways, but yeah, so thanks for coming on and talking about training.
Last thing about training, also go take a med class. Don't just do the gun stuff. Take the other stuff as well.
Yeah.
And also tell Stacy I said hi.
All right.
Stacy. Yes.
Stacy, who's Stacy?
What?
Just kidding.
Who?
Hi, Stacy.
All right.
She listens.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it, Brian, Jason.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
And Valkyrie Defense.
Good night. Valkyrie Defense out.
Okay, and we're back. So I'd like to welcome everyone back. And that brings us to our events. And we have a big announcement regarding... I should get a drum roll sound effect. Registration...
Scared the crap out of the dogs.
Oh, the dog's awake now. It's okay, buddy. Go back to sleep.
Registration is now open for the charity shoot. So we got some details here that I'll run through, and I will have them up in the show notes. We've got an early bird cutoff of May 1st, and if you register by May 1st, you're going to get a t-shirt, a charity shoot. We're designing a charity shoot t-shirt. So that's going to be included with your early bird registration, and you're going to get... a ticket to win a door prize. And so far we have OozeCon shotgun, and we're still working on some other stuff. We've set up a Sunday IPSC squad, New Shooter Canada squad, but you must register by March 31st, and to register you'll do that through Kelly. And we've set up a special email for the charity shoot, which is newshootercanada@gmail.ca. The IPSC shoot is going to be on Sunday at the Kingston Frontenac range.
At the Frontenac location, right. So that's Sunday on the 26th.
Right. So, and that's going to be $150, level 3. So if you want to shoot with just New Shooter Canada listeners, then you got to register through Kelly before May 31st.
It's March 31st.
Sorry, March 31st.
Right, my birthday.
So, and we've also, so when you register, also wish Kelly a happy birthday.
Thanks.
And put in brass brackets in a whispering voice. So, but the fun does not stop there. We've also secured RJ from Fire Arts
Solutions Training. Training.
It's fast. And I was trying to work out the fast.
But it wasn't going too fast, was it?
No, it wasn't. Oh, RJ, I'm so sorry. Called his wife by the wrong name, his son by the wrong name. Can't get his training academy by the right name. He's going to have a complex. Anyways, so on the Friday before the charity shoot, so that's the 24th, he's going to run his training program. That's going to be $50, limited to 14 people.
Right.
So all of this, you can register for everything through the newshootercanada@gmail.ca. That's where you're going to send your EMTs. So if you want just the charity shoot, then it's $35. If you want the charity shoot and RGS course, you're going to send an EMT for $85. And I didn't do the math, but if you want to do all three, then you add $150 to the $85, which would be $235. And so you can register for all three all at once. Again, the email is newshootercanada@gmail.ca.
Can I add some stuff?
Yeah, I was going to do the same thing.
Okay.
Well, so, you guys don't have it written down. I'm just reading the script.
I know. So let's recap. So on Friday, we're doing, RJ's going to be doing from Fast Training. He's going to be at the Frontenac range. It's $50. In the $50, it is RJ's fee, but it's also the range fee as well. We have to pay for the range, so that's why it's a little bit more, but you're also getting lunch as well. So it is limited to 14 people, so the first 14 that sign up, after that, I'm going to post something on our events page saying that it's full and that we won't be accepting registration for anybody else. And so on the Saturday, which is the 25th, is $35. You get a t-shirt if you register by May 1st. After that, you can still get t-shirts, but you're paying for it, right? and that. So yeah, you can still get t-shirts, but it's not going to be included into the $35 fee. You also get the one ticket entered into the for the East Con shotgun as well. And that as well is at the Brockville range. The IPSC match, it's called Summer Fun, and it's put on by the Frontenac Range, and it is a provincial match, and there's going to be people from all over Ontario that's coming to it. They are letting us have our own squads, and that's why they said, you guys coordinate it. They're not opening up registration until April for this. So that's why I said March 31st is our deadline. You get it into me. You fill out the paperwork that we have as well, because I'm going to be forwarding that on, and it means basically they'll make sure that you guys have a spot at the IPSC match. And it's a level 3, and I believe it's 12 stages that they have. So all that information is going to be on our events page. There's going to be some paperwork on there, so files basically. Download those files and attach them to the email that you're going to be sending to me if you want to participate in the IPSC thing, because we'll need to know what you're shooting, what your black badge number is as well, because you have to be certified in you have to be a black badge member in order for you to do that. You just can't, you know, I can't do it because I'm not black badge certified. So, yeah. Thomas, you got anything else?
No, you covered everything I was going to say.
Okay. Makes sense? Okay.
Hopefully we get a lot of people in the squad.
Clear as mud.
Level 3 is a big match. That's gonna attract a lot of top shooters. So.
Yeah, I'm hoping that people who there is a Thursday, Friday, and a Sunday match, and I'm hoping that people will choose to come to the charity for shoot on the on the Saturday, and then choose to do the IPSC match on the Sunday.
Well, the pre-shoot is probably for the workers at the event.
There is a pre-shoot for the workers, but yeah, he said that there's going to be matches on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I think Thursday is the pre-shoot for them. So, anyways. So that's what we've arranged. There's going to be some other things happening as well, like things like, you know, barbecue and all that. And we can meet up on the Friday night. We're going to have a pub in Brockville that we're going to all meet at and all that as well. All that information is going to be on the website, but you don't need to actually register for that stuff. You just need to register for the stuff that we've just talked about. So we'll be taking EMTs. So if people in Canada, you can do EMTs, the United States, I don't think they can do EMTs. So, we're going to be hooking up a PayPal for you guys too, if you want to use that. If need be, you can do snail mail, but with checks, but, yeah, I prefer you not. So if you can do EMTs and PayPal, that'd be easier. That's it.
And how, any iTunes reviews?
No iTunes reviews. I went on and I checked out every single country that downloads, and there was nothing.
Well, I see you crying yourself to sleep.
Nah, nothing for 2016 yet, so let's hear from some of the other countries as well, but Canada too. So somebody, who's going to be our first one for 2016? Let's see if it's going to be you.
Our Facebook likes have been doing well. We've got a lot of new listeners, 629 Facebook likes, no thumbs ups and no stars yet, but and we've got a lot of women liking the page. That's nice to see.
Yeah. We've been sharing, because of our ladies show that we did, we've been sharing them on a lot of the ladies' different Facebook groups and that too. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. And the AR petition, the last count, we've got almost 18,000 signatures. So that's great to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good too. Yeah. And that, so we've posted that there. George.
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi, I was on mute.
You know,
it's okay. I was throwing Thomas under the bus and went, why is no one laughing? And I'm like, oh, it's because George is on mute.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. So check out some of the other awesome podcasts we listen to: Action Shooting Radio, Slam Fire Radio, Modern Rifleman Radio, Reloading Podcast, Arm Couples Podcast, Arm Squirrels Project, Firearms Cafe, and actually the Firearms Cafe, and there's a second one that goes along with that. Tony does the Armed Ape as well. The Armed Ape is not so much firearms related, it's more kind of movie reviews and other such things, but same guy. Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns, and oh yeah, Some Crazy Unknown Trucker on the Road Gunner Podcast. Now, we give you fair warning, you've been warned. And it's Chaz, a good guy. And I've got a new appreciation for his podcast, because now I've actually entered the trucking industry, so I can actually relate to that part of his podcast as well. So check all those guys out, and gals. We got a lady on the Armed Couples. And enjoy them as much as we enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us to closing comments. And I was poking around in our stats, and I decided to look at where some of our world downloads are coming from. And we have regular downloads coming from Germany. Outside of Canada and the U.S., Germany is ranked third, fourth, depending on the month.
Excellent.
So my shout-out is good. To our international listeners, including our German listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly's the German of the group. I would say, oh, Dankeschön. I do know how to say thank you in...
That's pretty good.
Dankeschön.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get a review from Germany.
That'd be cool.
That would make Kelly's week. She would be walking on clouds.
Especially if it was an iTunes review.
Mm-hmm. And you can even write it in German.
There you go. Yeah. So that's my shout-out for this week.
Yeah. And for me, I got nothing. I don't really have anything.
I got a couple. Frosty, he posted a picture about the data steps when we were talking about the manuals. Because it actually says right on the barrel to read your owner's manual. But one thing I forgot to mention is choke tubes. You've got an older gun, and it's got a full tube on it. You can't be running steel shot. And some of the guns will actually be stamped on in your manual or on the barrel to don't use steel shot in them. So thanks for took a picture of an old owner over and under or side by side, and you actually had the data information on it. So thank you, Frosty, for that. And Tom from Port Perry for allowing the girls to shoot his SKS and use up all his ammo. And I'm glad my suggestion about switching the contacts for shooting came in handy, because that's what he's been doing. He's been using the contact lens thing I suggested. It's been working out for him, so that's good.
That's good.
Thanks for your time and your guns, Tom. It was appreciated.
Oh, I want to just add one more quick one to Mini Uzi. She's
Mini Uzi?
Mini Uzi. She's a wrestler. Tom's daughter. She is just cleaning house every match and every tournament she goes in. She's pulling gold. So, congratulations to Mini Uzi.
Mm-hmm. He's very happy. He's very much a proud daddy too.
Mm-hmm.
So, congratulations to the Uzi family.
And at least you won't have to worry when she starts dating, because the little girl can take care of herself.
Exactly. Between dad and sitting on the porch with the double barrel and the rocking chair waiting for the boy to come home and her wrestling skills, I think they've got it covered.
Good.
Not that Tom would do any of that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Anyway, so that brings the show to an end. So unless you guys have anything else.
Nope, that's it.
No.
Crickets. Okay. So until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Take your kids shooting.
And keep it classy.
Good night, Kelly.
Good night, Kelly.
God.
See you guys next week.
Good night.
Good night. Winchester tag.
I like my double barrel. Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at host@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day. I like guns.